Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of NYPD Blue Balls. That is a special episode. It's Binging with Ben. Hello, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing good, Kirk. How are you?
I'm doing great. Another season of NYPD Blue. And I think, if I'm correct, you binged this one a lot faster than some of the other ones.
Yes, this one I got in under 2 weeks.
And that's all of season 5, 22 episodes, under 2 weeks.
Yes. No skipping, no nothing, no fast-forwarding. Straight watch.
And I did semi the same thing, but I had it on in the background, and it amazes me because I was like, I don't have enough time to watch all of these episodes in 2 weeks, and it kind of highlights just how crazy quarantine's been. So happy quarantine to everybody out there, because I'm sure we're still in it.
Happy quarantine.
Hope you're watching something else other than The Office, maybe NYPD Blue. So season 5, I believe it's the second full season of Bobby Simone.
Yes.
I would say it's a season that has less, I guess, relationship friction and more, like, health-wise friction. I mean, the big stories are Bobby and Diane are trying to have a baby.
Which, let me just say, that scene in itself was just weird. After they were intimate, she just looks at him and says, "We just made a baby." Mm-hmm. I thought I heard wrong. I put on the subtitles. And she said, "We made a baby."
Well, that I wanted to talk about that too, and we're going right in. There was a lot of softcore in this season.
Oh yeah, I made notes on the first episode with Kirkendall.
Oh and, yeah,
what's his face?
Cohen.
Cohen, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I put notes saying, "French your blonde lady. She's topless. You can get any information from him."
Well, yeah, we talked. Like, I remember because going back through the episodes, I'm remembering the podcasts. And that whole relationship gets dropped quick. Like, we never talk about it again after, I think, episode 1. Cohen and Kirkendall.
It does, but you do see some nuances between the two.
Yeah, like, they do have, like, a talk here and there. But it was really like, oh, the first episode, yeah, they're kind of together. And she's basically just using him for information. That's just what's happening right now. But back to the soft core of it all. Because I mean, I don't want to get in trouble with my work. That's why I never mention where I work on this show. I had it up in the background while doing some work, and then when I was at home doing chores and whatnot. A lot of times I was like, oh shit, this is a little too softcore-y to be seen on my phone.
Yep.
Or it's just like side boob. Or I think throughout the course of this season, we have an implied hand job. We have an implied... We do have an implied oral sex, which you missed not seeing the full cut of the...
I did see that on TikTok. You did mention that.
I did mention it. There's like basically an entire scene where they have sex to basically completion. Because you mentioned we just made a baby, which is the weirdest thing.
And for any guy, I feel like that's the last thing you want to hear in any kind of relationship.
Well, even after it happens... There's then talk throughout episodes of, oh, I think I'm pregnant. And he's like, how late could you be? It was like last week.
And she's like, oh, it's 4 days, but I know my body.
And she's like, well, don't seem too excited about it. There are maybe two or three times where Simone is essentially told, I'm pregnant. And his response is kind of like, oh, cool.
Well, I feel like that kind of even goes back to the last season where he asked her to marry him. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh. Okay, let me think.
That's right. And that was the beginning of season 4, was the
proposal,
and then it took an entire season for her to be like, maybe, let's probably get married.
But she's all on board on having a baby first, before getting married.
She's all about the baby, but the ring, not so much. Well, her alcoholism could really only affect a marriage, not a child.
I mean, never a child.
never.
Especially if you're carrying it to term. Never.
Never a child. Oh, man. Yeah, so that was one of the big ones is they try to have a baby. She becomes pregnant. Then finds out she had a miscarriage during a very tumultuous episode that I want to highlight eventually. But she has a miscarriage, and then they work through that together. And then by the end of the season, they actually get married.
Yeah.
That was the big... When I think about earlier seasons where, like, they have... They're their turmoil is, do we get married or not? And then she has this undercover, and then was she raped? And it's less, yeah. It's a little less harsh when it was this season.
Yeah, I felt like the end of this one didn't set up for the next season.
Mm-mm.
It was a nice, clean break.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if NYPD Blue ended there, I would have been happy.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. And then we have about seven more seasons to do. And the other half is Sipowicz's big thing, which he doesn't have like a really big racism comeuppance in this one.
But there was one episode where that did come up with Fancy.
With Fancy, and there's a slight one with Jamal, the drug dealer.
Yes.
Where it's not like a whole episode arc, but there's moments where they remind you, like, oh yeah, Sipowicz has his demons. But his real big thing is...
His health.
He might have prostate cancer. Well, he has prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, how much more is going to happen to that man's ass? He got shot in it, was hospitalized for that, had to sit on a donut, now he had prostate cancer.
Yeah, he's... And my own father had his own prostate issues. He's fine. Just knowing how much goes up and out of your ass from several doctors when you have prostate issues, and knowing Sipowicz's demeanor, it was a struggle for him, sure. His big struggle was kind of, do I admit this is happening to me?
Mm-hmm. And I liked how they played that throughout the series with the doctor saying, Andy, we need to talk about this. He's like, I told you, don't come to me at work or home. I'll talk with you later. And then finally the doctor calls his wife and tells him.
Which it was kind of like a, especially nowadays with, because we're dealing with a pandemic, we're dealing with major health crises, and we weren't before, but just the idea that you can't, as a doctor, you're not supposed to legally call their family and say, your family member has this, they are going to die if we don't do something. Because in reality, that whole scene where the doctor ends up telling Sylvia and she freaks out on Sipowicz, it's not legal. Like, he could have been in serious trouble if Sipowicz, like, pursued legal remedies. But it's just crazy that if he really wanted to, he could just eventually wither away and never tell his wife.
But being married to Sylvia, a DA, I'm sure she wouldn't have allowed that suing to happen.
Which is why she wouldn't allow it, even though it's the it would be the death of her husband is the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of that, I mean, those are the big broad themes of the season. Before going into specifics, I wanted to bring up stuff I didn't even realize until I binged it off and on. Because every episode, I kind of come at it with this attitude of, like, everybody gives Medavoy a hard time. Until I watch all of these episodes back to back, he is really an annoying character.
Yeah, that's my consensus too. And even the writers try to give him his badass moments.
They're not really that badass.
Especially when he got the information from a cookie. From a seminal...
Oh, seminal thinking, yeah.
Yes.
Where,
He just keeps on going and lying and getting more aggressive.
And lying and lying.
And then he confesses. And everyone's like, wow, great job. Yeah. I'm going to give you an accommodation. And you see him just walk into the bathroom, pinch himself to make sure he was not dreaming.
I'm watching all these episodes, and there's all these little quirks. Like, you texted me when you were watching it, and you said, when did Greg learn so much about Judaism? And I was like, well, yeah, there was that episode, Torah, I think it was season 3, maybe 2, which is also just good writing of the show, but, like, it's not that he just knew, he was, like, making sure everybody else knew, and making sure everybody else follows, and it was like, we got it, Greg, like...
And the fact that he scooped up some of the blood from the site of the dirt and gave it to the father. It's like, here, we want you to have this. Isn't that tampering with evidence when you take it and you give it off? But I guess the case is closed and it's no longer needed.
That was one of those moments to make Greg like, okay, maybe he's annoying, but at least he's a good dude.
I have my reservations about that.
Because even Twin Pete's, the episode mm-hmm. with the twins, where you're like, he doesn't even understand what's happening the entire episode. He's just super concerned. And then Sipowicz is like, you're a good cop, and then leaves the bathroom. It's like, no, he isn't. He didn't do anything. He didn't prevent really anything. And he was confused the whole time. Like, it wasn't, he didn't do anything. And
I mean, given the information he was given, the psychiatrist never met the other brother.
Mm-hmm.
The only person that has seen him was his girlfriend.
In theory.
Right.
So, and I mentioned it on the podcast, which blew my mind again when I rewatched it. What he says to that woman is, look, I understand you may have been sexually assaulted by your boyfriend's twin brother. I'm not even sure if that's true. I understand this is really important to you, but to me it's pretty much moot. Which is basically saying to the woman, I don't really know or care if you were sexually assaulted by his brother, because I can't figure it out.
Right.
And I was like, wow, that's bold to say to a person who may have had this crime committed. And, oh man, and the episode with Cookie, with the gentleman who mixed the semen and put it on his victims like an idiot. When everybody is giving him compliments, like everybody's like, oh my gosh, you turned that Warpo's head around. You really, it was a great interview. Two great interviews, Greg. And then Sipowicz and Simone come in. The way Simone says, good job, Greg. It was almost a look like, I do this every fucking day. Like, I don't get a commendation every day.
Right.
For doing my job. And the thing that you missed, and I'm so excited I get to pepper these in. In the final episode of the season, the extended version,
mm-hmm.
because you saw the Hulu one, which is the cut down syndicated one.
Yes.
They cut out Medavoy and Martinez's entire case from the end of season five.
Mm-hmm.
In that episode, because I don't know if you listened to the podcast or the additional notes or whatever we call it.
I missed it.
Their whole case is they find out about a forgery ring of sports memorabilia. When they get to the apartment, there's a woman in there that looks a lot like Donna. It's basically Donna 2.0.
Mm.
Greg is surprisingly respectful to this woman the entire time, even though she, in theory, owns an entire corporation based on fraudulent memorabilia. They have the interview. Greg finds out that this guy, Terry, convinced her to sign the lease on this place, then sign the lease on these, or sign the documents that she's the president of this corporation, then started this fraudulent business under her name because he's a multiple bankrupt. But during the conversation, you can tell Medavoy just really wants to bone this woman. Like, the entire conversation, it's like Donna again.
When doesn't he want to bone?
So,
like by the whole Abby story.
By the end, oh yeah, Abby. We have to talk about Abby, too. Because now he has more children that he doesn't ever see again.
Right? So when you say he's kind of a good character, that's where my reservations come in.
Yeah. And this woman, his real big, because they solve the case very quickly, and they bring in the guy Terry, who is famous face, completely cut out of the episode, Walton Goggins, who was on Justified, he was on Community, he was the dude that did the lie detector tests.
Oh, okay.
When I saw him on the extended cut, I was like, holy shit, that's Walton Goggins. After that gets played out, the rest of the episode is him trying to convince himself it's okay to call a woman on a case. Which, by the way, a woman that he signed off had nothing to do with the crime, and now he wants to date them. So, pretty standard police work.
I mean, you see doctors do it all the time with their patients, right?
Hey, I cured you of this disease. I found a lot about your personal life. You want to go out? Like, you want to be together?
It just sounds like you haven't seen Scrubs.
And Scrubs, as we know, is based on real life.
Very much so.
Oh, speaking of doctors, another famous face, Titus Welliver, is Andy's doctor, Monzak.
Yes.
Who
is Bosch.
Yes, he's Bosch. He's the man in black in Lost. He's a couple other things. He's also on Deadwood. Every time I bring it up to Kyle, he brings up Deadwood. How crazy is it that he just kind of becomes Andy's personal doctor, almost a beck and call through this entire series?
I think it was a nice throwback because he was the same doctor that took care of his son.
Oh, yeah.
So I think because of that, they have that good relationship where, I want to say it's beck and call. He does it more out of courtesy for Andy.
Yeah. That was the part that my brother and I kind of, we scratched our heads at, was he first met Andy because he was the admitting doctor when Andy died. Andy Jr. died. And then he was also the doctor when Andy Sipowicz attacked a bunch of young black kids. And then they responded, took his gun and his badge. And then he said, yeah, I just won't put your name on the paperwork so you don't get, well, fired. And probably suspended forever. Which is also firing. And then he finds out, oh, well, Andy's having a tough time. I'll just go deal with this other doctor for him. Like, I'll just kind of put him in his place and then basically show up at his work all the time and let him know what's going on. It was just, to me, it was just crazy that it was like, Andy doesn't like this one doctor, even though that doctor did save his life in many respects.
Yes.
So he just gets this other one. I don't know where I was going with it, but I just found it interesting that Titus Welliver was back.
Yeah, I liked that.
And it did. And that's another thing the show does, which was so cool. Like, with Medavoy and the Judaism with Dr. Monzak. And if you noticed, I forgot what episode, Sipowicz puts down a coffee cup, and it's one of the James Martinez for delegate coffee cups.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Like, there's a lot of references and continuation of stuff that they're like, oh, yeah, I mean, we remember season one stuff, season two stuff, and Dr. Manzak was a good one to be like, well, we can bring him back and have him be the doctor again.
But do you want to upset me about starting this season?
Sure.
Was the time in between. Because right after season four...
That's right.
Andy shot him.
You think Andy... Well, yeah, you think Andy shot him.
And he's like, go home. Don't worry about it. Just, we're going to go home. And then season five picks up months later because Gina's pregnant... She's got the belly. That doesn't happen overnight.
No. And she's also... That's right. We did... I forgot to write that down. Gina gets pregnant and then just keeps going to work as she's getting bigger and bigger and then doesn't acknowledge it to anybody she works with. Because even when Simone showed up after those months, she sees it, he sees her and then he's like, hey, Gina, cool. And then she mentions to James later, like, yeah, he clearly saw my belly. He's like, everybody knows. Like, what do you mean? What do you mean Simone noticed? Everybody noticed. They're just being very nice to you and not saying it out loud. It was just, I don't know. I don't know if it's being naive or whatever. Just like, oh, I'll just keep going to work. And how long can I pull it until someone notices? That also highlights that Fancy, he has two detectives that are clearly together. A detective that's clearly possibly dating a district attorney, and another detective who is obviously having sex with your PAA. And if you ever ask him, he's like, I don't know.
I don't know. Same laws in the military. Don't ask, don't tell.
We're safe. Don't know what's happening. And even when Simone was like, I don't know. I don't know. But that's, yeah, season one, especially if you watched the season finale of episode four, Jimmy Smits got way more tan.
He did.
And he got way more skinny.
Especially when he took off his shirt for the sex scene. I was like,
what?
He looks like he worked out. happened in between?
He got super ripped and then got some sun.
In those 3 months, I'm going to say he was under arrest. Private prison. You know how it works.
Yeah, it was very strange. Because, yeah, just watching that first episode, especially after season four, you're like, what? Why is he so tan? I don't know the movie, but it turns out Jimmy Smits did a movie in between those two seasons in South America and lost some weight for it. But it was just like that. And the way they tried to cover it up, which was...
They made Andy seem fatter.
Yeah, they're like, Andy, he's like, I may have gained some weight since we last saw. I was like, bullshit, we know what happened. Like...
Yeah,
that's another streaming versus...
I made a note about this, but also, Greg is still a fat ass.
Yeah. Still eating all them donuts.
Yeah, I saw him eat the donuts, and he was shorting Sipowicz on the change. He's like, he always does this to me.
Oh, that's right. Man, Medavoy. Because I like wrote down a handful of things. He was, at one point, he comments on two different dead women's sexiness throughout the season. There's one where the hooker was dumped in the trash, and he was like, yeah, that. He's like, yeah, super sexy. And then the one, Box of Wendy, which is another awesome episode, because her brother, Wendy, was boarded up into a box. Metavoy said, I got a name for your case, Fox in a Box. Like, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing that?
You Dr. Seuss now? You change your professions?
Also him with Abby's baby. Just the, like, very early on, Abby has a run-in with an ex-girlfriend where she murders her current girlfriend.
Now we can be together, Abby. You love me, Abby. You love me.
And there was part of me that was like, I wonder if... Because we're living in a more PC culture, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're learning more about people who live differently than we do. I always wonder, is there a contingent of LGBTQ plus community that would watch NYPD Blue and be offended by some of the portrayals of gay people? Like, that lesbian character where she's, like, obsessive and crazy and has one person murdered... And then her attitude is like, well, now we can be together. I murdered your girlfriend. Like, absolutely insane. And then there was the gay character in Box of Wendy that started crying on Sipowicz when and he's, like, freaking out.
That's her.
Like, it was like, I wonder, even though it's not completely offensive, it's like, I wonder how it would deal now if some groups were to watch it and maybe. Because I always loved John. And he was in this. He was in this season.
He showed up, and I was very happy to see him.
Because Dolores, I mean, a little quick side note on Dolores. She was sunk from day one.
No one liked her.
She had made a bad first impression. She was after a crazy woman, Naomi, who is from Australia, pretending to be from the South, to try and become a New York cop, and.
That was a whole crazy story arc.
But the one thing she did do was her job well.
That's true.
And Dolores showed up and she sucked. And then we get Naomi coming back and saying hi. We get John coming back and saying hi. And mm-hmm. He's like, God, I miss when John was here.
But it turned out he's now working in the computer graphics industry.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a couple of our friends.
And as we know, those friends are super gay.
And they live together.
With a couple lovely dogs, and nobody else.
Maybe a mustache girlfriend in there, but, you know, the writing's on the wall. We know.
We know what's happening. They're basically married. The best part is they're never going to listen to this.
Never.
So, I'll just send them a clip of it, and they'll be like, oh, you guys.
But let the record show that they are not... They are very straight.
Mm-hmm. Very straight.
And they are in happy relationships with...
Happy?
I'm just kidding. No, that's...
Are happy?
Well, we'll leave it there.
We'll leave it right there where we had it. But yeah, they really kind of screwed Dolores over. And did you even notice Dolores, the actress, was in an episode, two episodes earlier, as a different character?
I didn't see that, no.
Okay, in the episode... I can't remember the title... But it's the episode where the record executive was killed in a bathroom.
Yes.
And it turned out to be the janitor who just went apeshit mm-hmm. on him. The woman that was the first on the scene was Dolores. It's the same actress. I don't know her name. And then two episodes later, two or three, she shows up as Dolores. And I'm like, they pretended like we weren't going to notice this? Like, it's the same person.
Which, funny enough, I looked up that actress.
Hmm.
She was on Criminal Minds.
Oh, shoot. As who?
I don't know. She was in the first season, then she gets in a coma, and then she pulls through, and then she leaves the show.
the old coma pull-through. Nah, I'll do that later. I'll do that sort of as a wrap-up, all the crazy famous faces. Like we've mentioned, you're watching the show for the first time. How crazy was it to find out about what is going on with Naomi? Where she shows up as the southern... person and like doing a great job at work, very cool, affable, attractive, and then just absolute insane crazy shit talking to Simone about being from Australia.
I kind of believe it. I think it kind of goes with the time, with immigrants still coming in, trying to find their place.
Forging insane documents to try and become law enforcement.
It's not the craziest thing I've seen on TV.
it was one of those storylines where when it was happening, I was like, why don't I remember this PAA? And then that part where her accent, I was like, oh yeah, they get rid of this one quick.
Yeah, she was in there for a spell and then gone.
Absolutely just vanished. And then they bring in Dolores, and I don't even know if she shows up next season, gonna be honest. And I guess this is also Medavoy being annoying. The episode where James just casually mentions that he hurt his back having sex with Gina. And then Medavoy found it necessary to tell everybody in the office that's the reason.
Or the fact that he almost breaks his back.
Well, yeah.
He's like, I broke his back. I think he's going to die. And then Andy comes like, nah, it's more muscle. You'll be fine.
And it's also the... I love that whole scene. And I rewatched it a couple times because so much of that scene is dubbed when you rewatch it. I don't know why, but for some reason James brings up his brother, which is a story from way early. His brother died of drug overdose.
Yeah.
And they dub in that information, then they dub the guy talking about it to him, and then they're, like, manufacturing a serious fight, and then that's when Medavoy brings him to the chair. But, and then what I love afterwards is Medavoy's sitting there like, oh man, I really hurt his back. I really hurt his back. And they're like, oh, I mean, he was saying it was hurt all morning. He's like, yeah, he said he had a, you know, domestic difficulty. And then they look at him, and Medavoy's like, okay, that's my cue. So apparently he was boning Gina in a weird position. Like, why do you have to say that, Greg?
Greg just doesn't know tact. Let's just say.
He's like, he's slightly autistic and doesn't understand.
If he can't bone, then he's going to make it awkward for everyone.
Yeah, and oh man. My brother said something that, in regards to Medavoy and Martinez, once he said it, it was like, oh yeah, that's 100% what it is. He's like, Medavoy and Martinez are partners. And they obviously work well together. Well, they work together decently. They care for each other in a work relationship. But in reality, when Martinez goes home to his family and his friends, he explains how annoying Medavoy is. because like Medavoy brings the tape of Abby's delivery.
That was just so awkward. Like, I'm like, who wants to see that?
He constantly is in moments with in seminal thinking when he starts yelling at Martinez about that guy's MO, and Martinez is like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
And Greg's just like, I'm just pissed off.
I have to yell at somebody. And it really kind of opened my eyes, because then watching the season again, I think Kirkendall does the same thing. Any scene with Medavoy and Kirkendall ends up rolling her eyes at what Medavoy does.
Mm-hmm.
And not until I had all of them next to each other did I realize, like, man, Kirkendall probably hates working with Medavoy.
I think a lot of people do. Andy just doesn't hide it.
He's
very up about it up front.
Yeah, Andy's... I mean, that's one of the things you said. I think you said, I don't know if a text message or in person, I can't remember. It's like, what really brings you back is Andy.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy is... You just, and it happens this season, happens every season. He just says exactly what he's thinking. And sometimes it gets him in trouble, sometimes it gets him his results. Especially, I think the big one was Lost Israel, when he goes too far getting ready to put the finger on this guy, and Simone has to be like, no, he's too smart for that, you can't do it right now, and then he gets thrown off the case.
I think, didn't he ask to be pulled from the case because he got too close?
Yeah, he brings it up to Fancy and he's like, hey, you need to make it public that you're taking me off the case and you're going with Simone, because he believes the father. Just the meat of who Andy is like, I'm going to say what I think, and if it offends you, that sucks.
Yeah.
And then either that gets him the results or it gets him screwed over.
I would say for Andy, the big episode that I would say was a big part for him was the one with the kid that got pushed off the roof. And the racist dad.
Ooh, Weaver of Hate. Yeah.
That
That's a whole episode.
That was a really good one. Because he was the one talking about the racial prejudice too fancy.
Yeah.
And I feel like Fancy may have taken it a little bit too far. He let his emotions get more into it.
Yeah. That's one I wanted to bring up, too. Weaver of Hate, of course. Kid gets thrown off a roof. They bring in the dad to get information. The dad spouts the N-word, calls black people monkeys, smokes. Like, unbelievably racist shit. And there are those moments in NYPD Blue where something happens, and you're like, Jesus, they did... What? Like, they're doing this right
now?
Yeah.
And talking about this, I kind of want to go back to my first point.
Oh, yes.
When we first talked about Andy using the N-word.
Yeah.
And with everything kind of going on in our climate, just want to make it said, I am pro Black Lives Matter.
Absolutely.
Even though back then it may have been more like Blue Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in that episode, Andy using it kind of just like gives you that power and just like that kind of cringe of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now even seeing the dad use it, the weight of it was, I feel like it's still there.
Yeah.
But then when the dad uses it, it's more of a derogatory, where Andy's just using it as reflex.
He was reflecting what the dude said, and that's kind of the way of Andy speaking, and he doesn't realize.
Yeah.
And we went over that episode a lot because I remember Kyle, he still is like, Andy's a racist. A drop of racism is racist, and I understand his point of view. But the most racist thing Andy said in that episode wasn't the N-word. When you rewatch that episode, the most racist thing he said was basically he looked at a black guy and was like, well, we all know that you're violent and you do things, bad things to people. And you're like,
yeah.
Okay, that's way worse. That is 100% worse than him repeating what a dude said. But in this instance, Weaver of Hate, this dude finds out that his son died, and then just the entire veil of what is decent conversation is ripped off, and the dude just becomes belligerently racist about black people in that area of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And
even later on, when he comes back to interview, Fancy is like, I want to be there. I want to talk to him. And he's like, I don't have any problem with you guys. I mean, Like, I hire you guys. I gave a guy like you
in advance.
I mean, I like them. They're okay. But...
Oh, yeah.
I feel like when you try to cover it up or, like, make an excuse of why you're okay, just highlights the more that you're not okay with it.
In that episode... Oh, man. Because that whole episode, I was like, oh, how do we... It also is hard just being a white dude. I'm not saying it's difficult to be me. I'm not saying that. I was like,
That's my privilege.
It's hard for me to like try to talk about what Fancy did because I truly won't understand how it feels to be Fancy in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I watched it, I was like, Fancy overreacted. Not to it being said. I don't think he overreacted to that at all.
I think he overreacted after. To the man being racist.
No, I thought what happened was, okay, he heard blatant, unbelievable racism in basically his office space. He's the boss. He runs that floor. And he's like, I don't care what the reason is. That guy's gone. I don't care. And to that, I was like, 110%. Especially when the dude saw him and he was like, and he was just saying horrible things to his face. It's like, this dude needs to fucking leave. And then later in the episode, Fancy's like, I want you to bring Weaver back in and I want to interview him. Or I want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
The point where he's like in his face screaming at him and saying, the reason your son is dead is because you're a racist. And I brought you in just to tell you that. I was like, that might be a little too far. Mm-hmm. Like that was a use of your power. Not to advance this case, but just to
shove it in his face.
And that's why... And then, of course, you have that great scene where Andy is like, what you did was wrong.
And then he said, I'll take notes from you. From a racist person like you.
Yeah, and then you have... Yeah, it was such a good episode and a good scene. The part of it that makes me very inquisitive, I guess. Curious. Because they have that whole scene where... Sipowicz is like, you shouldn't have done that. that makes you as bad as him. And he's like, do you understand how ridiculous it is you giving me a talk on racial sensitivity? And you're like, that's a good point.
Yeah.
When Sipowicz leaves, he's like, well, if I have to tune up this kid, which means beat him illegally, that's on you. And I was like, no, it isn't. You don't have to beat on suspects. And then Sipowicz and Simone are like, we're going to have to go talk to Weaver. They didn't film what he said to Weaver. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was talking to Kyle. I was like, what does Andy Sipowicz say to that guy to get that guy to cooperate? And how bad is it? Andy has... he's had his racial issues. So does he open up a conversation with a racist like, hey man, I get it. Like, what does he say to him?
You don't like him? I don't like him. Let's bond over this.
And that's what...
let's go grab a beer.
Because the next scene, the kid's just there that they're trying to find.
Yeah.
So you're like, what did he tell him? Like, what does Andy Sipowicz do to get on that good side? That's the part that makes me wonder.
I think that's just true to Andy's character. He knows how to read people and how to get what he needs from them.
Yeah. Because Weaver of Hate, that's a good one. That's a really good episode. And another good episode I wanted to talk about, Box of Wendy.
Yeah.
I really like Box of Wendy, mostly because that character is so weird and sinister.
Yeah, I just... when am I going to get my Coke? I asked for Coke, not ginger ale.
Yeah.
And it took 2 liters of Coke for him to confess.
To confess to two murders.
To two.
And it was one of those episodes, almost like the Webster Killer, where you're watching and you're like, what is this guy going to do? Because he obviously did it.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those episodes where, like, he obviously did it. Kind of like Lost Israel. He obviously did it. How do we prove it? And the dude is just stonewalling everything. And the one thing that tips him over is...
was the soda.
He's like, well, if we get you a Coke, will you confess? He's like, will you give me a liter?
You give me two, and I'll confess to two. And the man drinks the whole thing.
Yeah.
I don't remember him pouring him in a cup. Did he do it?
Yeah, he was pouring him in a cup. When he was telling Sipowicz.
Oh, okay, that's right.
When he wrote it out, like, yeah, oh, I just love that character. It's like, I don't even know what to say other than that. Just him.
He also reminded me of the other character. I forgot what case it was, but, like, he had, like, a very, like, menacing look, and then he's the one that grabbed, like...
ooh, that's the janitor that beat up the record producer.
Yeah.
Because they brought him in, and there's no real context of why he's there. And then they say, like, were you ever in a mental hospital? And he's like, yeah, but I'm on medication, and that's fine. It's like, do you ever lose control? And then he tells the story, and then he goes to rip Diane's hands off.
Yeah. Like, those two characters were very similar in my book.
Oh, man, yeah, it was... a lot of menacing people, and Lost Israel.
That two-story part was really good.
And we didn't get in trouble, but we got some flack. Not flack.
Some grief.
We had a disagreement with a dude, because when I talked about part two, because there's a part where the mom kind of completely breaks down and has to admit...
and she was hysteric.
And she was hysterical, and I was like, I was like, that seems a little hammy. Like, she got real intense, like, real ham-bone. And then a dude literally tweeted us. He's like, oh, I listen to the show occasionally. I wanted to let you know, I run a mortuary, and I've seen family members when some of their family members have died, especially mothers with children. So he's like, it's a lot more like that than you would guess.
Hmm.
And I was like, well, thanks for being honest. But, like, I remember rewatching those scenes, especially with the dad, like, screaming back at her and, like, spitting, and you're like,
yeah,
Jiminy Christmas. And yeah, you didn't see the full version of that episode, which the second case is about a doctor running an insurance scam
about injuring him. They claim the...
yeah.
I heard the podcast, though.
Oh, okay.
I have a gist of what happened.
Yeah, that one. And that guy is a famous face too. I don't know his name. But he was
not that famous, apparently.
No, he was cut out real fast. He was in he was in Brink, which is why I know his face. But he was also in Forrest Gump as one of Jenny's boyfriends. But yeah, it was just a bummer. It was a bummer to find out that those extended versions exist. Because you're like, oh man, now I have to second guess all the Hulu episodes. And especially with like Lost Israel, which were so good.
Yeah.
And then you're like, what? Oh yeah, the editing was weird. And then when you watch the full thing, you're like, oh yeah.
My question was on Lost Israel Part 2. Did he really commit suicide? Because, I mean, like Andy said, like, this isn't the worst place he's ever slept. He's going to be getting a meal. He's going to be taken care of. So my question is, like, why would he commit suicide at that point?
Oh, man. Because that's the one thing about Lost Israel that I think was a real shitty low point. I think the guy who played Israel was awesome.
He did a great job. And the fact that he was a mute, using the Bible to talk,
and
that was perfect.
And he had multiple scenes in the first episode where Sipowicz was, like, angry at him, where he was nice to him, where, like, they have to manipulate him in front of the dad,
mm-hmm.
and he can't speak. And I was like, man, this dude is killing it. And then the beginning of part two, he's hanging in the crib. And I think the reason he did it, because even Sipowicz says he's no dummy. Like, he knew what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. He just couldn't speak. I think he knew how screwed he was.
Mm.
I think he, just living on the street all that time, I think he knew, no matter what this cop does for me, no matter what I try to tell them, it's really stacked against me. Like, I have, even if they give me an attorney, what is he going to do? Even if he knew what an attorney was. He's like, who's going to believe me? That's why I think he was just like, there's no use in trying. And he's going to be accused of something he can't even imagine, which is raping and killing mm-hmm. Brian.
I think it's just hard for me to believe that after Andy told him, like, hey, like,
yeah,
we're not going to do that. You're going to be fine. And I wonder if, like, one of the other detectives, the guy that was on watch, may have said something different to cause that.
Yeah, maybe. Well, it was Shannon. It was the uniform Shannon was supposedly watching him.
And I just love his argument saying, like, hey, he was on a suicide watch or he wasn't this.
I don't care. It also kind of highlights, and bringing up Shannon, that brings up another great story, which we'll get to. But it also highlights how a detective can work hours and hours on something, like the Lost Israel case, where there's all these nuances.
Mm-hmm.
We believe it's the dad. The mom has no idea. She's basically manipulated. The son has been sexually abused for years. The dad has came up with like this foolproof frame on this guy. And then they tell a uniform officer, hey, watch this dude. It's like, well, what's the deal? He's not a prisoner. We need him for a case. Just keep an eye on him. And it's like, I don't know what's going on. And then when Shannon sees Sipowicz come back and he's like reading the Bible, he's like, this guy's no dummy. And he starts talking about it. He's like, I don't know what you're fucking talking about.
Yeah.
Like, cool, I guess. I mean, this was just a mute dude that I watched most of tonight. So, yeah, it was such a sad story.
It was.
I thought that guy who played Israel did such a good job. It was such a bummer he's not in the second episode at all.
And that was the big highlight for me, was how well he did it.
Because it really didn't hit home for me. And I almost got emotional when they at one of the times they interview him, they show him, like, kid porn, like, kiddie porn, and then they're like, Brian's dead, do you know what's happening? And he's just, like, screaming, and you're like, oh my gosh, why are you doing this? Sucks so much.
Yeah, that was torture to watch. Him being tortured on that, and he's like, I didn't do it, but I can't say it.
Oh, man, and just watching watching Sipowicz get angrier and angrier. And he's like, I can't. He's like, because, you know, Sipowicz just wants to, like, punch that dude the second he sees the dad.
Anything that involves a kid.
Oh, yeah.
He's on those cases.
And he even makes the comment, I need to get off this one.
Mm-hmm.
And they take it seriously. And he was like, no, we're totally good. Same thing with a kid, the episode Hammer Time.
Mm-hmm. That one was messed up. Even the name of it is kind of screwed up in context.
Because it's also, because, like, we're living in a streaming age, and when these were airing, sometimes people didn't know the titles and stuff. And so, like, I get to Hammer Time, I was like, well, which one is this? Hammer Time. And then they show the woman, and then they show the picture of the girl. I was like, oh, is this the one where They killed her with a hammer.
I like that episode kind of illustrating Sylvia coming back into the DA. Mm-hmm. And how Andy kind of went off. It's like, Cohen gave her immunity. This. And Sylvia's like, I would have done the same thing.
It's our job. It's not
on, like, that wasn't him. That's just the job.
Yeah, and Cohen, because, yeah, Cohen has done some things that pissed off Andy.
He had lunch with a lawyer.
Yeah, that lawyer ended up running a game to kill a witness.
Yeah.
That was Wally DiCarlo, and that was the last episode.
Is it the last episode?
Yeah, because that has scenes cut out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that one has some good scenes, too, because...
But even, like, those things, even after that episode, it kind of shows, like, Cohen knows some things, but he's not 100%, like, there for the department.
It highlights that lawyers are lawyers. And detectives are detectives, and it's really unfortunate, because even Leo was there for Lost Israel, where they're having a meeting, and Leo's like, I'm going to be honest with you. If I had all this information, we'd just go to bat right now. And then Sipowicz is like, are you listening? He's like, it doesn't matter what I tell you, Sipowicz, I'm just saying this is what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another one that I'm trying to remember the details of. A lawyer arranged another crime, it was earlier in the season. And Cohen, it was that crazy woman. I say crazy woman with mental health issues. She had red hair, and she witnessed the murder outside of like a bar.
Yeah,
and then turns out the lawyer arranged her kidnapping, and Leo's like got the information about it by saying like the lawyer will be immune. And Sipowicz got pissed at him, and he's like, "Look, man, this is how we figured out the crime, and the woman's fine." That's what I was asked to do, and that's what I did. So that friction is always there, and I think it just helps that the other lawyer, the other DA, happens to be his wife. So he doesn't do it all the time.
Mm-hmm. And that's hard, because the police department are there to put people away. But the only way that the DA is able to get information is by alleviating their sentence.
Yeah. And because there's so many times, like, is it Hammer Time, or that, I think the one is The Truth Is Out There, I think is the one with the woman who gets...
Yeah.
There's these moments where Leo is just straight up looking at someone going, this is what I have to do to get this to work.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sipowicz gets upset, and he's like, look, you can get as upset with me as you want, it's just how it is. And another good example, I think, was the one where Fancy's old friend visits. And he's like, I want to report a murder from, like, 20 years ago.
Mm.
And then they bring in Cohen. He's like, well, you know, we can't do anything. He's like, I'll set up the camera and I'll ask the questions, but there's not much we can do about this.
Yeah.
It's just the facts, and I don't know. It's a good interplay between those kinds of characters.
Mm-hmm. But another one that I liked was the sting operation to get the officer to admit that he beat his wife. Or, like, he killed that one girl.
Oh, he killed Darlene Geddings.
Yes.
Yes, that's Tommy Richardson.
I was just more impressed that it spanned 3 episodes.
Yeah.
And that I feel like that's the longest that they ever done for a case.
As
a side case, it felt like more.
It also has some distance, because it's 2 episodes back-to-back, and then another one an episode later.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only time something like that happens is Sipowicz gets the Bucci case, which is like, I forgot how many episodes that is, but Sipowicz just at a car lot, like, notices something and then calls up, gets some info, and then randomly solves the case from like 10 years ago. It's like really weird. But Tommy Richardson, I wanted to bring up Tommy Richardson, because he became kind of like the joke villain of the entire season.
I would say so.
Because he's a musclehead and a weirdo, and freaks out in very funny ways. Very Nick Cage of all the characters. And he calls everybody by their name strangely. Bobby, Diane, Lori, like everybody.
Andy.
Like everybody has a weird inflection. But yeah, like you mentioned, like you liked just how they caught him, or
the longevity of it.
Yeah,
the fact that it's like, oh, we don't have anything to put it on him. Mm-hmm. Oh, like, let's interview his other girlfriends. Oh, he's super nice to her. I don't know why. And then you see the wife again, and she's got bruises.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how did that happen? Oh, like, he gets like this when he's drunk. Or
it also has, what's that guy's name? Oh, I wish I don't know, I wrote it down. Because there's a character, Jason, Jason was the dude, because the whole story is they get a DOA, Darlene Geddings. She's like tied up with boot laces and like cut with a knife. They find out that Tommy Richardson, a uniform officer, is good friends with her and visits her frequently. And they get pointed to an ex-boyfriend.
Who is an actor. Who's an actor. Working as a bartender.
Then they get pointed to Jason, who is her current boyfriend, who also has some mental health issues. It's pretty clear.
Wasn't he at an asylum, though?
Yeah. He was at a private asylum.
And he's like, I killed her. Like, this happened.
He's like, and if one of the things I loved about that episode, he's a paranoid schizophrenic. So he's convinced he did it because he has a history of doing things like that, and he's paranoid that he must have done it.
Mm-hmm.
So when Tommy set him up to do it, he basically set up the perfect guy to frame it, because he'll immediately be like, oh, I've done stuff like this. Yeah, totally.
But then it wasn't until the interview where it's like, but did you do it? It's like, I was just there, and I had to have.
And he remembers all the details before and after and the entire day, but he doesn't remember doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, but I must have. I must have, like, blacked out or something. Because if I don't take my medication. They're like, well, are you taking your medication? He's like, I don't know. Maybe I'm not. And then,
maybe I'm taking it, but subconsciously I'm hiding it under my tongue.
And that dude, I love Jason, because I was like, that dude is doing such a good job of playing this kind of guy.
Yeah.
And then when they see him again in an asylum, and he's like, hi, Mr. Sipowitz, hi. What's going on? You guys are reconsidering my innocence, right? Because I don't think I did this. And he's like, super nice, but, you know, he just has some quirks. And you're like, that, it was just such a good character. I think, what's his name? Michael Glave. He's been in some stuff. And I was like, that guy did a really good job. And then, of course, juxtaposition, you got Tommy Richardson, who's acting like an insane person.
Mm-hmm.
One thing about it that is a constant theme throughout the show is bringing in delegates, accusing other police of crimes, how that looks in the department, how everyone gets upset immediately, even if they don't know the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite moments was when they tell Shannon, like, you don't want to get in front of this. I know you're doing your job, but you don't want to be in front of this dude. And even him at the interview is just like, are we done? Like, he doesn't want to be a part, be a part of it anymore.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm done. Like, I'm going to go now.
I don't want to be a part of this anymore. While mentioning good acting, Jamal, the drug dealer in the chair.
You mean Gus from Breaking Bad, Moth Gideon from The Mandalorian?
Yep.
And soon to be Dr. Doom in the new Fantastic Four reboot.
Yep. That guy.
He was great.
Because this is the second episode he's been in. He was in one where I believe he had AIDS, and he was like robbing drug dealers, and
mm-hmm.
Simone was like, you know, that's going to get you killed. And he's like, why does it matter? I have AIDS.
But then they brought him back for another character. He even referenced Andy. He's like, don't you remember me?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That scene with Bobby and him, where he's trying to get that guy to confess. Well, not even confess, I guess, but give up the guy that shot him. And then Bobby's kind of using his religion against him in a way.
Yeah, pulled out the cross. He's like, oh, so you believe.
And he's doing it. He's doing it to a guy who literally can't move.
He's like, do a cross on my, please.
And it's so, and he, like, oh man, just that episode as a whole is very strange, because you're dealing with a quadriplegic. The story is all of his friends took two women and gang raped them and then tried to murder them. Because he was shot and put in a wheelchair. And when they interview the guys who did it and figure out that crime, their response is like, well, yeah, we did that. Have you seen our buddy? He's in a wheelchair. And you're like, how do these things equate? And then when they ask him, like, well, did he tell you to do this? He's like, no, he doesn't talk much. And I was like, then why'd you even do this?
It's an unspoken code, Kurt.
Why did you do this?
It's the bros before the hoes mentality.
Yeah, and you mentioned the scene where he walks in, he's like, you don't remember me, you fat, ugly pig. And he's like, well, were you clean on the toss? Like, you threw the drugs away. You were just upset I was with a white woman.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, that's... And that scene, oh man. NYPD Blue, great show. The scene before that was Sipowitz almost breaking down because he's telling Simone that he's going to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, there's a moment where you're like, oh man, Sipowicz might die. And then yeah. the next scene is like, you remember me, right?
It almost gave him perspective mm-hmm. of like everything that he's done. And now it's like, I could die. Maybe I do need to change. And then it's like, you don't even remember me.
You don't remember. And he did Giancarlo Esposito?
Yes. I think that's it. That's how you say it.
yeah, he was killing it. And it's also just a great thing about NYPD Blue where you see them and you're like, what? And then they start acting and you're like, they got it. We knew it. We knew it back then.
Like, what's his face? Anthony Anderson showing up?
Oh my gosh, he was Von Dell.
Lawyer. Go call my cousin.
Mos Def. Mos Def was in like the first three episodes. And he's in that episode almost the entire time.
Yeah. I just like, what is this man? What's he doing here?
it's insane. Anthony Anderson. I mean, going through just some of the
famous faces.
Wrote in all the margin there. Jay Chandrasekhar from like Beer Fest. Super Troopers.
Oh, okay.
He was in, I believe, like the second episode where he played an Indian man with like a yes, really him. Thick accent. And I was like, what the fuck is he doing?
Okay, yeah. I remember I saw him and I was like, I know him from somewhere, and I saw him.
Oh, I didn't write his name. The guy who played Michael Jordan's dad in Space Jam. The woman that was the crackhead in Always Sunny when, I believe, Dennis goes, this is why you want to have health insurance.
Oh, yeah.
That woman's in an episode. Mos Def, Paige Torco, which is Abby. She's in Teenage Ninja Turtles 2 and 3.
Mystery of the Ooze.
And Turtles in Time. Rajit Chahardi.
It sounds familiar.
He was in The Office. He was the guy that Michael recruits to be part of his sales team. That was the telemarketer. I can't remember his name. But
now I'm seeing it.
Every time I see him, I'm like, oh shit. That guy. That guy indeed. Ben and I actually stopped right there because Ben's wife came home, so we took a quick little break and came back with more famous faces. But that'll be in part 2 of Binging with Ben, season 5. Hope to have you listen to that 2 Tuesdays from now. Anyway, if you need more NYPD Blue info in your life, there's a couple of books out there. True Blue, written about the first couple seasons. What Would Sipowicz Do? A collection of articles written about the show. Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, which is only 99 cents on Amazon. If you need the show, it's on Hulu. Keeping in mind that some of them are edited, at least for season 5, you can check it out on Amazon or possibly get the DVDs for the full experience. Also, if you want to get in contact with us, maybe we missed something about Season 5 you want to talk about, even though there is a Part 2, Asher Brothers Podcast on Instagram and Asher Bros Pod on Twitter. Thank you for listening. Please rate and review if you have the chance. But more importantly, wear a mask, make healthy decisions for you and your family, and have a good one. Peace. Keep watching NYPD Blue.